Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. Here at Driven to Business, we like to talk about business. We like to talk about entrepreneurs, business principles. We even like to talk about failures sometimes as we learn from them. And as part of that, we sometimes like to talk to folks that are in the state, local, and the national government here. We've been fortunate here on Driven to Business to have Governor Deal as a guest and a number of other government folks. And today we have Ben Hames. Ben is the director of the Workforce Division of the Georgia Department of Economic Development. Ben's been in government now through two administrations here in Georgia. He started off as a speechwriter for Governor Sonny Perdue. Ben, welcome to Driven to Business.
Well, thank you for having me.
Ben, you and I were talking right before we went on the air here. My niece, Stephanie Mayfield, last name Sin, now she's been married, I just refer to her as my craziest niece, is a good friend of yours.
Well, she absolutely is. One of the great benefits and blessings of working in the governor's office during those two terms was some of the talented and just neat people that you meet, and Stephanie was certainly near the top of that list.
She is a sweet gal. We really love her in our family, and of course I've known her pretty much all her life, and her dad is my youngest brother, so we certainly have a good tie in there. In fact, she said very good things about you, Ben, and how pleasant you were to work with there at the governor's office. Hey, let me ask you about your job right now. You're with the Workforce Division of the Georgia Department of Economic Development. Tell us about that and what your mission is there. What do you guys do?
Yes, well, otherwise known as the artist, formerly known as GAL, the Governor's Office of Workforce
right.
Development. Now, we're excited to be part of the larger economic and workforce development infrastructure in the state. Governor Deal made the strategic decision that workforce development really should be part and parcel of that economic development infrastructure. So we are now a division within the very well-respected, very successful Georgia Department of Economic Development. So when Georgians hear those announcements about Baxter and Caterpillar and even Kia and others coming to the state of Georgia, so often at the front of that effort is that Georgia Department of Economic Development team. And so by aligning workforce there, we feel like we're going to have an ability to benefit from kind of the real-time conversation and activity in the marketplace.
You know, we are very blessed here in Georgia to have a pretty good business environment here. And you guys have had a lot of success recently in bringing new businesses here to Georgia. Are there any of them that particular stick in your mind that you're particularly proud of having come here?
Well, you know, I think, you know, the big numbers maybe say it best. Since the beginning of 2011, more than 1,100 new businesses have chosen to do business in Georgia. And so I think the risk of talking about those big names that I mentioned earlier is that sometimes those large numbers get lost in that conversation. You know, 1,100 new businesses, that's 90,000 new jobs for Georgians. And so really just excited about the activity that's happening across the board and around the state, both in the metro area and across the rural portions of our state as well.
Hey, Ben, to back off just a little bit, a bit of a personal part of your background, you have a very interesting career. I'm a Southern Baptist, and you have a master's degree from a Baptist seminary. Tell us a little bit about how you, in the world you went from that to being appointed by Governor Deal to your position.
Well, that's a good question. I think it was a wise man wrote a proverb that said something about a man planning his way, but the Lord establishing his steps.
Exactly.
So we hope that's what's happened here. I don't have the blueprint because I certainly didn't follow it to get to this place, but it has been an interesting journey, and someone has said, I think, quite well, all that I ever needed to know I learned in kindergarten, and really the same holds true for that part of my education for those 3 years in seminary, and you think about those lessons of doing unto others as you would have them do unto you, to work as unto the Lord, and just what that does in terms of teamwork and work ethic, and I think that translates into the workplace.
You did not, I assume, when you enrolled in seminary, have any idea you'd be working in the state government, did you?
No, sir.
That's just an amazing story to me. The fact, you know, I went on a rafting trip here a couple of years ago in out west, and it was a young lady on the rafting trip through the Grand Canyon who had a master's degree from the Harvard Divinity School, which is unusual to hear to meet anybody like that. And so I asked her what she's doing, and she's an executive with Google. So I mean, you just can't, it's just crazy the way the turns and the twists that life takes. You know, I sometimes say, Ben, that you know, I there are people, I think, young folks who I think they can just look at their life and they see a straight line and they do see a blueprint for a career. I do believe there are people like that, but I think most of us took a different path. Most of us, again, to put it in a bit of a spiritual way, we sort of walked in the light that God kind of shined on a path in front of us there and just did the best we could do. At least that was the case with me.
Yes, sir. And it's the same here. And I've just had really the amazing opportunity to be around some really neat people and, you know, the chance to work with Governor Deal. You know, it'd be hard to overestimate the value of working alongside him and just what you learn about how to work with others, about how to think through things and to do the hard work to really understand an issue and then to move in a wise direction. And so I think some of those experiences alongside, first and foremost, Governor Deal have really shaped me and where I am today.
I've met him a few times, both through Stephanie, and also he's been a guest here on Driven to Business. I find him to be, Ben, a very likable and approachable individual. Now, I realize you work for him, so you've got to be careful what you say. But in general, just you've already done a little bit, but just give us your impressions of his leadership style and what you see about him.
Well, listen, let me just say by way of introduction, I will make no attempt to sound impartial here. and those that talk to me or have heard from me will have heard this before. But, you know, Governor Deal, for those of us who know him best, who have worked closely with him, he is like a wise sage, a grandfather figure to us, just in terms of his wisdom. He constantly surprises you with his humility. People always remark on the collaborative environment that he has created. And, you know, having been around him and been involved in some of those closed-door internal conversations, You know why there is that collaborative environment, and it really begins with the fact that he likes people.
So, you're right.
And so that's a pretty good foundation for working well with others, but it really is a very unique individual. And I think, you know, again, kind of has an incredible combination of humility and then, of course, you know, the wisdom and intelligence that he brings to bear on any given policy area.
Let me give you a quick story about him that you may not know. I happened to be at a concert that he attended, he and Ms. Deal. And when it was, and I had a lot of other friends there. And when it was over, I went somewhere else. But he went, it turned out that Governor Deal stopped, he and Ms. Deal stopped at a Wendy's after the concert to get a, I guess, a hamburger or whatever they got. And there were several friends of mine in there, and they told me that the governor comes in and just stands in line with everybody else. And for a while, people don't know who he is because he doesn't make any big entrance. And they even messed up his order a bit. And they said he was extremely gracious about it the whole time, very polite, asked for no special recognition, benefits, nothing. It was a long line in there, just stood in line with everybody else, didn't even tell people who he was. People began realizing who it was and came up and talked to him. But that says a great deal. I think things like that to me say something about people's character that goes way beyond any kind of politics or anything they may be pushing politically. It just talks about somebody's the humility of character that I think a lot of great leaders have.
Yes, sir. And that story, I think, that does a pretty good job of getting at you know, what's special about him and just the authenticity across the board that you see from him.
And let's talk about these jobs you're talking about for a moment. You know, I've talked to a number of guests here, and with other business people just in general, and we lament the irony of relatively high unemployment here in the United States, while at the same time, businesses like mine that employ high-tech type people, skilled labor, have a lot of problems finding that skilled labor. We got about a minute to the break. Can you tell me a little bit about that? And we'll continue it after the break, by the way.
Yeah, and we look at it in terms of, you know, a statistical payer. There are 11 million unemployed Americans, 4 million jobs for which employers report they're unable to find a skilled, qualified individual to take that position. And we know that largely that speaks to a skills gap. By 2020, the IMF estimates 63% of the projected 48 million job openings will require a post-secondary credential. And that's not a four-year degree, to be clear, but a post-secondary credential. So we have to think hard in terms of Georgia's population, just as other states are going through the same exercise of how do we get more individuals trained and educated for the jobs of tomorrow, because it's just as you say, there is a gap there, two populations that need to meet: those employers who need to find the skilled individuals and those individuals who need the skills to fill the jobs. And so that is our work in workforce development, to connect those dots.
I want to continue talking with you about that after the break. You know, Ben, there were 60 Minutes did a whole series on this lack of skilled labor in the United States. CNN did the same thing. Manpower, the largest, I guess one of the largest temporary employment agencies in the world, says that their most difficult jobs to fill are skilled workers. And that's whether you're talking about people that are welders or in my case, in my company, EMA, we need power electronic type guys. We just don't find them. A lot of them, unfortunately, that are skilled at that are people that are middle-aged and above, and so we don't have a lot of young folks pulling into that. And I think one of the things that that we as a state and as a just as employers and as we just as citizens, as we look at what's necessary here in the state, that we began to look at that, as you said, hard and start trying to marry those jobs with those people. You're with Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We are streaming live, by the way, on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. We're here on Biz 1190 every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. Our guest today is Ben Hames, and we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Driven to Business. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. As always, we're glad you're here. We're talking with Ben Hames. Ben is the Commissioner of the Workforce Division of the Georgia Department of Economic Development. Boy, Ben, how do you spit all that out every time you introduce yourself to somebody?
It is a mouthful.
It was easier when you said, I'm the Deputy Director of Dowd.
Read that.
Well, you must be very important to have a long position like that. That's all I can say, longer than I could ever say. Ben, before the break, we were talking about the idea of places like Georgia and other states that have the same problem, trying to have enough skilled labor to meet these 90,000 new jobs that you guys have done a great job of helping to attract here to the state. Tell us a little bit more about how you're doing that.
Yeah, well, Governor Deal launched a program about 3 years ago, Go Build Georgia, and really with the idea that we had to do something to get at what really is an issue that begins and ends with the perception of careers in the skilled trades. And what we know is that the parents and young people today have a low view of careers in the skilled trades. And so what we want to try to do through exposing them to the real opportunities that are out there and that oftentimes now actually pay quite well, what we want to do is try to begin to change some of those perceptions and talk about why the career paths in those areas might make sense We know that today, for every four individuals leaving the skilled trades, we have only one person in the pipeline to take their place. And so what we must begin to do by working with high schoolers, and we're even looking now at getting to the middle school population, by getting in the ear of the counselors, the teachers, administrators, the education community at large. We have to get chambers on board around the state. We have to begin to point people in this direction so that we do not have a persistent and growing skills gap in this area. And to be clear, this is not a Georgia problem by any stretch of the imagination. It's an American and even a global issue. But I think what we've done in Georgia through the Go Build platform is begin to attack the issue.
You know, manpower, I cited them a little bit earlier. One of the things they say is that it absolutely, they're a global company. They say it absolutely is a global problem. It's not a U.S. problem. It's not a, certainly not a Georgia problem. It is a global problem. I was on the phone talking last week with a friend of mine, Andy Carpell, who runs a an IT firm out in Phoenix, Arizona, and he called me to ask me for any tips I had on where to find skilled workers that he could hire out in Phoenix. And I said, well, we have the same problem in Georgia. And in fact, Ben, everybody I know in my business is trying to hire people, and they just can't, and it's hard to find them. So this really is something I think that on an educational standpoint, I know in my community, your average kid coming out of high school has the idea that they should attend a four-year traditional college. And I'm not opposed to that at all. I don't mean this is not any kind of a slam on four-year traditional colleges. But I am of the opinion that the trades should at least float in there and be considered because, as you said, honestly, the pay in the trades is equal to what a lot of kids are going to make coming out of college with a degree in English or history or something like that. They're going to do better off, actually a lot better off, by getting a skill in the trades. And I always tell people that, you know, if a guy comes out and learns a really good trade and learns how to deal with customers, he can end up starting his own business, and at that point, his income potential is as high as anybody else's is, no matter what their education.
That's right, and you kind of hit on there one of the elements that I think we need to be letting kids know about, and that is the entrepreneurial opportunities that exist in these fields that, frankly, there aren't as many of those outside of the skilled trades. And so, you know, I think that is something that would be very compelling, and we need to make certain that that's part of the message to the next generation.
You know, I think a lot of the – I've thought of this many times as to why a generation sort of looks down on skills, and I think part of it is the idea we all hear that all manufacturing jobs have gone to China. Well, that's not true in the first place. Georgia's done a good job of attracting – manufacturing jobs right here in the state. Now, the manufacturing jobs are not what they used to be. They're high-skilled jobs now. There's not a lot of jobs anymore of just pushing a wheelbarrow around or something inside a steel mill. You don't have much like that. But they're automation-type jobs and even running CNC machines and programming CNC machines. And like in the automotive industries, a very complex machinery, robotic machinery, they need people to operate them, to program them, to maintain them. Those are all great careers that right here in our state that are out there for young people, good paying careers.
Absolutely, and as we've begun even just recently on as we've toured the state with the governor's high demand career initiative, and we're three meetings through a 13 meeting schedule. Started in Atlanta, we've been to Dalton and Statesboro, but as we've sat around the table with companies ranging from Alcon and Porsche to Great Dane, Mohawk, Kia. You know, across the board, as they outline their needs and the gaps that exist in terms of workforce. And again, to be clear, you know, none other than CNBC has said that Georgia has the best workforce in the nation.
Right.
But nonetheless, we face some of the same challenges that other states face in this global workforce shortage. As they've outlined the positions, these really are highly skilled, highly trained individuals that they're looking for. And so it's incumbent upon us in workforce development to work with the technical college system, to work with the university system, and make sure that we're doing everything in our power to accommodate business. And that kind of speaks to really, I think, why we've had so much success in terms of economic and workforce development in this state. I think Governor Deal brings everyone together, and there is an understanding, there is a mandate, you know, that we work to support the private sector to accommodate the needs of business, because we know that not only makes sense for those businesses, it makes sense for our schools, it makes sense for the individuals who get the opportunities, get the jobs, it makes sense for their families and certainly in their communities. So I think that that focus on private sector activity, you know, is having an incredible impact in terms of job creation, and it also just gives us a very, very clear direction in terms of workforce development. So what we're looking to do even this year through that High Demand Career Initiative is just to continue a very real-time conversation with businesses who are operating around this state to understand exactly what they need and then to begin to address those.
I think that's great you guys are doing that. I'm so happy that you are. I know even the governor had addressed that even when he was a guest on the program here. You know, Forbes magazine, you'd probably disagree a little bit with this. Forbes magazine says that Georgia is the fifth best place in the country to start a business. We might all say it was number one and be glad to do that, but it moved up from when Forbes said it was number 15, and there are a lot of reasons for that. We Ben, you may not know this, but we own a business in upstate New York, which, and we love the folks up there, and we love our customers up there. We also own a business in Pennsylvania, and particularly in Pennsylvania, with the onset of the business up there, with the natural gas business being so good up there right now. Those are good places to do business, but we still have got things right here in Georgia that are so much more attractive, not the least of which is our weather. I think you cannot discount the fact that we're not generally snowed under with ice 6 months a year around here. And that matters to people that are trying to run businesses and trying to drive cars on the road and get things going around here. If you got about 30 seconds, you can tell me right quick the number one thing you think makes Georgia a good place to do business.
Well, you know, let me just use the Governor's High Demand Career Initiative as an example of a larger environment and ecosystem that we've created, and that is one in which our educational institutions, economic development, Governor's Office, General Assembly, you know, I think more than ever before, we're working together to accommodate business, and we understand just how important it is that we do the work on our end as a state team to make certain that businesses are coming here and growing here.
And I think you guys are doing a great job with that. We'll talk more after the break. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Our guest today is Ben Hames. More to come. Hang around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. By the way, let me remind you again, if you're in your car and you're driving somewhere and about to get home, we're streaming live on biz1190.com. Check us out there. Also, if you want to rehear today's program, it will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. We're talking with Ben Hames, and I'll read his long title of his again. Ben is the Deputy Commissioner of the Workforce Division of the Georgia Department of Economic Development. Wow. That is a great title. I love that title. Hey, Ben, I talked recently with Kyle Jackson, the Georgia director of the National Federation of Independent Business, and I've had Kyle on several times. Kyle always says that overall, Georgia, as opposed to some other states, has a very business-friendly government. I'm sure that you agree with that, but can you tell us why you would think he would say that?
I think it goes back to that approach that you see from Governor Deal, but then also from the General Assembly, and that right. is really an approach that looks first and foremost at private sector, and that is the area we know where you're going to get job creation, and with that job creation, you have knock-on effects and what that means positive terms for your schools, for your communities, for families. You know, there's been a consistent focus for some time on Georgia being a low regulation state, on right. Georgia being a bit accommodative in terms of low taxation. And I think as you begin to put those elements together with some of those things that I think you referenced before the break about weather and about some of the natural advantages we have of being positioned where we are within 2 hours of 80% of U.S. markets by air, within 2 days of 80% of U.S. markets on the roads, you begin to combine a number of those elements, and what you have is an incredibly competitive state in terms of that competition that is taking place between states and even internationally for jobs and investment.
And you know, another thing that a lot of people perhaps just pass over without thinking about it, we have a great infrastructure here in the state. We have a great power grid. Power is relatively inexpensive here in the state. You know, we have a great natural gas distribution system here in the state of Georgia, and large supplies of natural gas that are not in the state. We're at the terminus of a lot of pipelines coming in here.
Terminus, you say. Well, I mean, you know, the original name of Atlanta speaks to that logistics background and why we have become really the headquarters of the South. And, you know, 2 Class 1 rail lines,
right,
fastest growing port in the nation. It kind of all comes together to create a very fertile ecosystem for
business. Let's talk about the port for just a moment. Our family, every year we do what we call family camp every Labor Day, and we go down to Hilton Head and driving down 16. And I can tell you that over the years, as I've made that drive from Atlanta down 16, you know, to Macon and down Interstate 16 towards Savannah, that over the years the truck traffic has increased considerably, and you see a gazillion now of these container trucks heading down to that port, either coming from or heading to that port, and that speaks a lot to what's going on at that port at Savannah down there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the intermodal growth has been amazing. Growth overall has been, it has for some time been the fastest growing port in America, now the fourth largest in the nation. And, you know, one of the thing I'll say there, because a lot of folks miss this, and that is the Port of Savannah is majority export.
Right.
And so for all the consternation that you've heard nationally for some time about the trade imbalances, we really can hold that up as a brag point that our port, not only is it growing, but we're actually exporting Georgia and American products across the world. So that's an exciting element of what's going on down there.
It really is. And you know, because for a lot of us up here in Atlanta, Savannah is somewhere we go sort of on vacation, but we don't pay that much attention. We're not right in the middle of that. And I think the impact of that perhaps slips by a lot of us here in Georgia as to how important that port down there is to the economy of Georgia, but it's very important.
Absolutely.
Hey, I know that this may come as a shock to some of you in government, but you know, occasionally, us small business guys feel like we're being picked on by business. The idea that the government is kind of out to get us. Now, I will say, owning businesses in 3 different states. I used to own them in 4 different states. Georgia is the best of all of them about that. But you know, we can. I was kidding. My state representative at the state. In the state house is BJ Pack, and he does a great job. But I was kidding him on Facebook not too long ago. He was talking about all these new bills are going to pass, and I was like, "Hey, BJ, how about repealing some bills? How about getting rid of some bills?" And of course, he comes back and says, "Well, give me a list of what you." But I was just annoying him. But you know, how do people in government get small businesses to the idea that government is not our enemy?
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, I think we do have to be vigilant in our efforts to combat unnecessary regulation. And, you know, and that not only needs to take place inside the Beltway, but we have to, you know, perform that exercise hopefully year after year under the Gold Dome. And we have to do that locally as well. And I think, you know, my advice would be to business owners to not only deal with the pressing issue, the exigency, but to go beyond that and engage in a constructive way locally and to be part of the solution. I think, you know, Governor Deal has taught me something just about the power of democracy And I think that's something that we all need to have in mind within our local context to engage, to make positive change, because I think too many times the impact that regulation rules, the impact that's having on business is not clear. And it really takes that business voice to come in and say, this is exactly the impact this is having or will have. And that voice is really an integral part of the process.
You know, that sounds so common sense and intuitive, but the fact is, I think a lot of us in business, I will say, we don't think of it that way. Several years ago, I was part of the NFIB delegation up to Washington, and we visited our senator at that time up there, and he had proposed a bill that we felt like was pretty onerous for small business. And in fact, it was long before Obamacare and any of that. It was a change in some healthcare laws that would have allowed employees of a business to sue the business owner if they got done in by their HMO or something. And so we were up there saying, hey, you know, that's going to kill it. And I remember sitting in the senator's office with the NFIB reps and actually an attorney. And we were telling the senator that was the effect of his amendment to a bill up there. And he said, that's not in my bill. And the attorney that was there with us said, yes, Senator, it is. And he read it to him. And the senator turned to one of his aides and said, is that in there? And the aide was a female, said, yes, it is. He said, well, take that out. I mean, that, you know, and I tell that story, and then I'll have other people tell me that happens all the time. I just assumed they would know everything in a bill and its impact, because what we were saying was, Senator, if you do that, we're going to all drop insurance because we can't carry that kind of liability. We can't, you know, what do I know about an HMO? As a small business owner, I can't be sued for something an HMO might do. I have no control over them. I'm a member of the same HMO, you know, if I'm buying that my employees are. But it's just the idea that you do have to be engaged, and you can't assume that, you know, the legislators and their senators, they're not necessarily bad people. They just, it is incumbent on us in business to communicate with them and tell them, hey, this is going to mess me up, and here's how.
And, sure, and you know, but it is a two-way street, and that's why I think also on our end, as part of the state team and the government apparatus, we have to do what we can to reach out and make sure those voices are part of the conversation. So it's a two-way street.
And if you were put in charge of the federal government for a couple of years, what is there a change you might make that would improve jobs right away in the country as a whole?
Well, this is the king of the day question that I've been waiting for today.
got to break in about 2 minutes.
Well, you know, there's so many different ways you could go with a question like that. But, you know, I think probably I'll piggyback on your statement earlier about some of the things that perhaps legislatures should not do. And you look at some of the things that have happened in this administration, the Affordable Care Act, Dodd-Frank, and you begin to think about how they have reshaped finance and banking, how they have reshaped health care and the 17% of our economy that it represents,
right,
and the impact that has had, frankly, I think were we to roll back some of those regulation, I think you would probably have just an economic explosion in terms of activity and growth. And so perhaps if king for a day, what I would do is to roll back some of those things that have been so harmful to business.
I think you're right. And I do, you know, it bothers me a bit, and I've talked with a number of other business people about this, the idea that we have people making policy, and I'll just pick on Washington because that's the one that tax policy tends to be most onerous from. But we have people making policy that don't get the impact of that policy, and who I think have never operated a small business. They've never had to make payroll, and so they don't understand what that's like when you have to do that, and what it's like when something, you get hit with some regulation or some fine, or find you're violating something you didn't even know existed, and all of a sudden you find yourself defending yourself, and you know, you're either going to pay for that defense one way, or you're going to hire employees, or, you know, even things like audits. You know, you get yourself audited. Well, those of us, I mean, I'm not an accountant. I'm an engineer. And, you know, our company does engineering, electrical engineering type things with variable frequency drives. So what do I know about accounting? Well, I have to hire my CPA to come in at an hourly rate and sit there doing that audit, which cost me a fortune. And even if nothing is found wrong, I've still had to pay for it. And I just don't think a lot of folks at the federal level understand what they're doing to you when they do that. And I would like very much for them to figure that out. And maybe, again, it comes back on us as business people. Maybe we need to explain that better, of what the impact of things like that are on us as they come around. Ben, you've been a great guest. We have another segment coming up here. If you can hang around through one more segment, I'd like to pick your brain a little bit more about some of this. I appreciate you coming on the program today. Been a great guest.
Sounds great.
You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Keep in mind, we're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's Business Radio, WAFS Biz 1190. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. As always, time has flown by. We're in the final segment here. Our guest today is Ben Hames with the state of Georgia. I'm going to be in a shortened your title that time to get that there. Ben, what's the most enjoyable part of your job? And for that matter, also maybe you can tell us about the most challenging part of your job.
Yeah, I think probably what's been the most enjoyable over these few years has just been the chance to work closely with Governor Deal and the executive team that he's put in place. And really, I think our work is very missional in that you're here for a defined period of time and hopefully have an incredible opportunity to make a difference in Georgia, to make it a better place to live, to learn, to do business, to work. And so, that is something, that is an opportunity that I'm thankful to be a part of every day.
Well, about the most challenging part of it, what do you find challenging?
Probably the most challenging is just state government is, while it has shrunk in previous years as a function of tough economic times and also then, an executive decision that job growth is a private sector phenomenon we should be focused on and that state government should be smaller. Yet it remains a large enterprise, and probably the biggest challenge is making sure that you have the right players from that state team at the table in any undertaking and working with those individuals, leveraging all of the entities and assets that we have in a way that makes sense for Georgians.
Ben, being as you have been in government for a good little while now, do you ever see yourself running for public office? Is that in your future?
I don't know. Something I have considered, but certainly not in the plans in any imminent form.
Well, I would just think I hear from being around folks that are in it that it can be a bit intoxicating. Just the idea that although it is challenging, but it is also fun at the same time, and you sort of get to make contributions there. Now, I would think that would be for a bright guy like you, that would probably be something certainly that would be you'd consider. Hey, Ben, we talked earlier. You're a graduate of a Baptist seminary. You know, there's a lot of discussion going on nowadays about the role of faith in the workplace and about the sort of honing out the relationship between faith and government. And I do know that Governor Deal makes no secret of his Christian faith. Can you give us your sort of philosophy on that?
Yeah, I think, just from a personal perspective, I sometimes think of a faith that's of no earthly good, and that is a faith that it doesn't inform how you live and how you work and do what you do on a day-to-day basis. And I hope and I believe, that the biblical worldview is one that makes sense in the workplace. And so, as I said earlier, when it comes to working as unto the Lord, doing unto others as you would have them do unto you, I think those are things that translate. Those are things that motivate and inspire me on a day-to-day basis. And so, I would say I think there is a place for that.
Not being offensive to anyone else that's not a Christian, I think, though, historically, you could make the argument, a very firm argument, in fact, almost a complete argument, that Western culture and the success of Western culture equals Christian culture. It's very hard, if you go back in history, it's very hard to separate those things, isn't it?
Well, it is, and when you start thinking about worldview and the values that are driving us, you know, it's important always to see that, you know, in the absence of a specific worldview, in this case, we've talked about that Christian, you know, or the biblical worldview. I mentioned that certainly there is a set of values that is driving your decision-making process, and too often I think that is missed.
You know, Ben, I think that capitalism and a free market as we enjoy here in this country cannot exist aside from a set of values. I mean, if we have a situation where, for instance, if you and I agree that I'm going to sell you my lawnmower at $100, you know, the expectation is that you give me $100, I give you a lawnmower. You don't give me $100 and then I tell you, oh, the lawnmower has no wheels on it. I mean, there's just an understanding between us, and the government can't be involved, and we can't have policemen involved in every transaction. They've got to, most of them have got to work. I heard a speech recently by Malcolm Gladwell who was talking about taxation here in the United States, and he said that, you know, the U.S. has some of the loosest tax, I hadn't thought of this before, the U.S. has some of the loosest tax enforcement laws in the world, yet the United States has the highest tax compliance in the world. He didn't make his point so much, but I do. It has to do that there's a moral underpinning in the culture. And you could argue that it's eroding. There's a moral underpinning in the culture that you pay what you owe and you do what you say you're going to do. And you know, if you pull that aside, and I can think of some other countries that have tried a free market and it doesn't work. If you have to bribe somebody to get your driver's license, well, it just quits working the minute you get into a situation like that. And I think we're real blessed in this country to have that values underpinning that is a biblical worldview, as you put it, is where it comes from, the idea that we can do that. Overall, Ben, are you optimistic about Georgia's economy?
Well, I am. You know, the trends are very positive in terms of job creation, in terms of economic activity that we're seeing. You look at some of those competitive advantages that we have in terms of position of logistics, even the weather that you mentioned earlier. Frankly, those are important ingredients that make Georgia a place that people want to be. We've sometimes talked about Georgia as a magnet, but it's also appropriate to say we're sticky. There's not only that magnetism, but there is a term that others in the economic development community have used, and that is stickiness. People not only come to Georgia, they come to Georgia and they stay in Georgia, and that basically, better than anything else, provides a portrait of what Georgia has created in terms of lifestyle and it being a great place to do business.
You know, we have a lot of friends here that are from up north. I remember what the late great columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Louis Grizzard, wrote a column one time, and he said, you know, that when you meet people here from New York, he called them Yankees, as you meet the Yankees here, they will never stop talking. There's two things you can be for sure. They will never stop talking about how great it is where they came from. And the second thing is they will never, ever move back there.
So they're voting with their feet year after year. That's correct.
And, you know, he also had a lot to say about, you know, another thing I didn't mention, we have great barbecue here in Georgia. That's the other thing that I think has a lot to do with getting us down here. In about a minute here, and I know this is a hard question for a minute, but for young people just starting their career here in Georgia, do you have any advice for them, Ben?
Yeah, you know, it's something that I was taught along the way is really that no job is too small. You know, I think of the parable of the wedding feast and the idea that the biggest mistake is to go and sit in a place of honor. Someone more distinguished comes along and you're asked to step down. And then you walk away in shame. But I think you do what great leaders who I have had the experience to work alongside do, and you take the lowest place. You work with the idea that your job is to help others do their jobs well, make others look good, work every day with the idea that no job is beneath you. And I think really then you are positioned to succeed and positioned to be of a great value to your team.
You know, that's actually very good advice, because it's the way a lot of us probably started off is a lot less than that. But, you know, I used to work for a guy out in Texas, a very wealthy guy that was very, very successful in business. But, you know, he would, if he saw a full trash can there in the hall, he would pick it up and take it out. I mean, he didn't say anything. He didn't gripe at anybody about it. He just picked it up and did it. And he didn't do it to show out. That's just who he was. He thought, oh, the trash needs taking out, and here I am. So he would just pick it up and do it. And that says a lot to me about a person's character and really their ability to lead, the fact that they do not think too highly of themselves. Ben, you've been a great guest. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to be here today.
I hope to meet you sometime in person. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're here every week, and we'll see you back next week at 11 o'clock. Bye-bye.